America's military has no preordained right to victory on the battlefield. A striking statement, even more so coming from US Defence Secretary Jim Mattis. In the recently released US Defence Strategy for 2018, Mattis says the traditional competitive military advantage enjoyed by the US is slipping away. He warns that a major war is more likely now than it has been in decades, with the US facing defeat without major change and investment. Peter Jennings is the Executive Director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thanks very much, Patricia.
Jim Mattis seems to be saying that the US military is not as good as everyone thinks it is. Is that what he's telling us and why?
Well, I think he's trying to make a case for the need to modernise the US military after almost 20 years of continuous fighting in one area, the Middle East. And it's certainly true to say that a huge amount of money has been spent on that, but it's come at the cost of underinvesting in modernising the American military. And it is now looking, frankly, out of date and rather tired, especially compared to the pace of military modernisation that we're seeing from China and Russia to perhaps a lesser extent.
Jim Mattis wants the change and he wants it fast. What's he actually specifically calling for? Okay, we talk about modernising and changing, but what is it? What needs to change?
Across almost every area of the American military right now, they're facing obsolescent current military systems. So, for example, if you look at the US Army, there's been no new major vehicle introduced into the US Army for the better part of 20 years or so. What Jim Mattis is looking for, though, I think, is investment into missile systems and what they're calling third-wave technology, which is really designed to overcome the rapid rate of technological advance that's taking place in their major competitors, which Mattis identifies as China and Russia on the first rank, and then North Korea and Iran, perhaps a little behind those two.
We know that President Trump wants more spent on the military. That was part of his campaign. Is this Mattis making a more detailed case for the same thing?
I think Mattis would probably have more of a focus on delivering actual military capabilities. I have a sense that Trump is more about sustaining American industry, particularly in the areas where his voter base was strongest in the centre of the country. Mattis is really focused on the high technology end, artificial intelligence, greater precision and greater range on the part of American military systems. That's not necessarily going to be an area where you'll see mass jobs created. It will still see a lot of money being spent on new defence equipment, but it's less of the metal bashing to produce large numbers of ships and aircraft that I think is really where Donald Trump's mind is at the moment.
Unsurprisingly, China and Russia, Iran and North Korea are talked about in the document as challenging the traditional global rules-based order. What does that mean in terms of the capability that Mattis wants going forward?
It means that we probably need a very different design to the American military than we have right now. The US military has really become the casualty of its own focus on fighting conflicts in the Middle East over the last 20 years or so, which has created a counterinsurgency force that's designed to go after non-state actors like terrorist groups such as the Islamic State. That's quite a different challenge to if you're dealing with traditional state actors in the form of Russia and China, which are able to mount, large-scale conventional and in this age, even nuclear forces. So what Mattis is calling for is a sort of a wholesale renewal of the design and the structure of the American military. And he wants that to happen in the context also of America's alliance relationships as well, because Mattis's strategy really sees the allies as being one of the key strengths that America can bring to the table that its opponents cannot.
China and Russia are painted as the main threat in terms of capability. Have they caught up or overtaken the capability of the US?
In some small areas, yes, but there are a number of areas of technology where I think it's clear to say the Americans are clearly still ahead. Stealth, for example, on aircraft and submarines, jet engine technology, sort of niche areas like that. But what China in particular has done has been to work on so-called asymmetric technology. A good example of that is the missile systems it's now claims it can use to keep American aircraft carriers as far away from China's coastline as possible. So they've gone for investing in technology which deliberately attacks America's weaknesses. And they've underinvested, or they've not put as much investment into building the sorts of conventional military forces that we've been used to see from the United States.
The US has been fighting in the Middle East for a decade and a half. As you've said, its focus has been entirely really there. How has that changed its readiness for a larger conflict or conflict, you know, in different areas, including obviously, you know, the talk it's been, the kind of rhetoric of China?
Well, I think it's done a number of things. It's certainly, frankly, exhausted the American Army and the Marines, which have carried the brunt of the ground war in the Middle East over that period of time. It's also probably led to a significant underinvestment in air power and in American military strength at sea. So, for example, you know, President Trump is talking about a major campaign to increase the overall number of American ships and submarines. But it's a bit like Australia, Patricia, that these are, you know, incredibly expensive platforms. They're slow to construct. And so the overall size of the American Navy has been declining at exactly the same time as the Chinese Navy has been rapidly growing. And so what we've got is an American military that's not really designed to deal with the emerging threats of the day and is really more about the wars that America has been fighting over the last two decades.
The United States spends more on defence than the next eight nations combined. Why does that not give them the best defence force?
I think because there's been a failure to invest in new technology, and the Obama administration really has to be one of the principal sources of blame for this, because so much of the American problem was failing to build the force that they needed for the next generation, spending their money instead on the cost of running, frankly, fairly unsuccessful wars in the Middle East. So the spend has been big, but it's been all about running current operations rather than investing into new technology and new military capabilities.
And this strategy document has the default position that a huge conflict is something that's more likely than not. It's a pretty scary thought, but is that accurate?
Well, I think we're entering an age where that becomes a risky possibility. There's, I think, an immediate problem, and then there's a slightly longer-term problem. The immediate problem is North Korea, and I think that the chances of a serious major conflict on the peninsula are, you know, pretty much 50-50 over the next 12 months or so. But Korea itself could be, frankly, a sideshow if we see a military conflict emerge between China and the United States or Russia and the United States. And there are areas where, in both those cases, you can look at potential flashpoints and be worried that these could descend into, you know, larger scale military conflicts if they're not managed carefully. So, yes, I think we're in a dangerous situation, and I think the warning that came in Mattis's you know, well-considered but only 10-page statement is something that we should be actually taking very seriously.
You've just rated a potential conflict on the Korean Peninsula at 50-50, which I think is much higher than I'd like to hear from you, and I bet our listeners would like to hear from you. This, as we know, Donald Trump has said he wants to meet with Kim Jong-un. Given that, wasn't that sort of a pathway to avoiding such conflict?
Look, it's possible, but in order for that to eventuate, I think you've really got to imagine that Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump sort of collectively jump the shark and do something which is, you know, hitherto unknown in North Korea-US relations for the last 70 years or so, and that has come up with an agreement to denuclearize the peninsula and probably remove American forces from the south. I frankly don't think that's going to happen. I actually think that the strategic objectives of the two countries are too different. And of course, meantime, as they position for this summit, Kim is continuing to refine the weapons technology he needs to put his nuclear weapons on intercontinental ballistic missiles. So we could find ourselves, moving into the middle of 2018 with the summit having not happened or emerged a failure, and be in an even bigger crisis than we thought we were at the start of this year. So it's not that I want to sort of worry your listeners, but I do think that we've got to consider the risks on the peninsula as being very high. And this won't be small scale. If the conflict does take place, it's going to be a major conflict of the type that we last saw actually in Korea around the middle of last century.
And as the US wants to improve its military, what does that mean for Australia?
I think it means that there's going to be more expectations placed on the allies, of whom we are regarded as one. And in fact, that's very clear in General Mattis's statement. He says we will do more with our allies in Asia. And in one sense, that's great because we no longer have to worry about the risk of Donald Trump doing away with his traditional alliances. But make no mistake, what this means is that there are going to be higher American expectations of what Australia can bring to the table in a military sense. And my view is that, it's time that we should all stop congratulating ourselves that we've just got to within about 2% of our gross national product being spent on defence. Because, in fact, I think the US and other key friends and allies will expect us to do more.
Peter Jennings, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Patricia.
Peter Jennings is the Executive Director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, and this is RN Drive. Up next, we're going to step into the drawing room.